Lesson 4, Civil Society and Human Rights Standards. When you complete this lesson, you will be able to understand 1. Civil society's role in enforcing human rights standards, 2. The different civic actors that can be influential in establishing and fostering human rights standards, 3. The role of non-state actors and the United Nations, and 4. Activities that civil society can engage in to promote international standards within their own country. Civil society and international human rights standards. Civil society can play a significant role in securing human rights. When civil society is allowed to flourish and operate independently of government, it can serve as a resource for government by linking citizens with their government, as well as acting as a much-needed check to keep government transparent and accountable to citizen needs and concerns. For the purposes of this lesson, civil society refers to formal and informal groupings of citizens that coalesce around common goals or interests. They may operate at a national, regional, or community level and may focus on specific cultural heritage, religion, sport, business interests, demographic sectors, or political affiliation and ideology. Civil society is distinct from the state and can involve networks through which individuals and groups represent themselves to the government and each other. Why is civil society important? Civil society is well positioned to hold the state and state-run institutions to account for respecting, affirming, and implementing the rights and obligations they have agreed to uphold in accordance with domestic laws and international commitments. Civil society can also help lay the groundwork for wider public participation in civic and political affairs, thereby increasing active civil participation. For example, civil society can 1. Educate the public about key issues, 2. Mobilize like-minded organizations and citizens to join their efforts, 3. Serve as a resource to both citizens and government on their specific issue, 4. Provide linkages between citizens and government, and 5. Monitor government to press for greater transparency and accountability. There are 2 main avenues by which civil society organizations may want to consider pursuing to help secure broad-based rights for citizens. 1, the first is to focus on the national level through awareness raising, coalition or network building, advocacy and engaging government officials directly on human rights issues that they may have the authority to address and change. 2. The second is to incorporate a large international level. This may include partnerships with other human rights organizations or international organizations working on similar issues, engaging international rights mechanisms, and a leading advocacy of international actors. These 2 tracks are not mutually exclusive, however, and incorporating different elements into your campaign may be best for your issue and your country context. Whatever you choose for your circumstances, the following sections of the lesson will provide you with ideas for how civil society can help to promote human rights. Civil society and the United Nations. Working with the UN or leveraging UN resources can be useful for both international and national level focused campaigns. As we saw in other lessons of this podcast, the United Nations plays a significant role in developing and upholding universal human rights standards through conventions, treaties, and declarations. In addition to advocating specific issues and providing recommendations to country representatives at the United Nations, civil society can work with the established human rights treaty bodies. For instance, civil society can do any number of the following. 1. Promote the ratification of a treaty. 2. Monitor compliance of states' parties to their reporting obligations. 3. submit information and material to human rights treaty bodies, including through written reports. 4, submit an individual complaint to human rights treaty bodies. 5, participate in human rights treaty body sessions as observers or through oral submissions. 6, follow up on human rights treaty bodies' concluding observations. 7, provide information to generate confidential inquiries. 8, provide information for early warning and urgent procedures. And 9, make submissions to the annual intercommittee of the human rights treaty bodies. There are a variety of mechanisms in which civil society can formally engage in with the human rights treaty bodies. These formal mechanisms include 1, formal observers, 2, special procedures, 3, human rights council complaint procedures, and 4, universal periodic review. In the following section, we will explore how civil society can use these formal mechanisms to work with the United Nations. First, observers. To be accredited as formal observers to the Human Rights Council sessions, non-governmental organizations are required to have a consultative status with the United Nations Economic and Social Council. Once accredited as observers, NGOs enjoy a number of particular privileges and arrangements at the Human Rights Council. They are able to submit written statements to the Human Rights Council ahead of a given session, make oral interventions during all substantive items of the Human Rights Council's agenda, participate in debates, interactive dialogues, and panel discussions, and organize parallel events on issues relevant to the work of the Human Rights Council. However, NGOs without such status and other civil society actors can still contribute to the overall work of the Human Rights Council and its mechanisms in a number of different ways that will be explored a bit later. Second, special procedures. Civil society actors, individually or collectively, may access and work with the special procedures. By submitting individual cases to special procedures, providing information and analysis on specific human rights concerns, providing support for special procedures country visits, working locally or nationally to advocate, disseminate, follow up, and implement the work of special procedures, inviting special procedures mandate holders to participate in their own initiatives, and meeting individual mandate holders throughout the year and participating in the annual meeting of special procedures mandate holders. Third, the Human Rights Council complaint procedure. 4 of the international human rights treaties currently have individual complaints procedures. The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, the Convention Against Torture, the International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, and the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. The goal of the complaint procedure is to identify systematic patterns of human rights violations in a state. Individuals, groups, or non-governmental organizations submit a complaint to address consistent patterns of gross and systematic human rights violations. This process is therefore not the right course of action to take for individual cases unless it is representative of a pattern of rights abuses. And 4th, universal periodic review. While consultative status with the UN Economic and Social Council is required to attend sessions of the Working Group on the Universal Periodic Review and sessions of the Human Rights Council, non-accredited civil society actors may contribute to the work of the UPR. By participating in consultations held by governments to prepare their national reports on the human rights situation in their countries, and/or contributing to the follow-up of the implementation of review outcomes. Civil society organizations may also use the UPR as a monitoring tool. Some civil society groups have used the UPR as an entry point with the UN, developing a shadow report on their government's progress towards provisions of the UPR. These reports were submitted to the appropriate bodies within the UN, focused on both the UPR and specific human rights issues. In addition to these formal mechanisms, there are several informal mechanisms by which civil society can use the UN for its human rights work. For example, every UN conference and the annual General Assembly meetings host side conferences where civil society organizations may attend workshops and meetings, present position papers, and network. These events can be invaluable places to make important connections, share ideas, develop issue-based coalitions, connect with important decision makers, and most importantly, let your government know how serious you are about your issues. Internationally focused human rights campaigns led by civil society. Building international support for the human rights issues facing your country is important. The international community has a great deal of leverage it can use to pressure governments into action. This is important to know so that you can do your own research to better understand which international players may have an interest in your human rights efforts, but who may also be able to provide you with valuable information, resources, and connections. With this in mind, it is also important to research and develop relationships with international organizations working on your specific issue. International organizations often include regional and country-based networks of like-minded organizations. National-level human rights campaigns led by civil society. In order to have success at the international level, organizations often build a comprehensive national-level human rights-focused campaign first. While there are many ways to develop a national-level campaign, several key components and examples are laid out in this section. One way to build national-level support is to develop a coalition with like-minded local organizations. A coalition is an alliance or partnership of groups formed to achieve a common purpose or to engage in joint activity around a common issue or goal. Forming coalitions with other groups with similar values, interests, and goals allows members to combine their resources and become more powerful than when they act alone. The power in numbers is extremely motivating for governments and is a successful strategy used by many organizations to push their issues forward. For human rights-focused campaigns, the formation of a coalition can help shift the balance of power. When individuals or smaller groups pool their resources and work together, they are generally more powerful and more able to advance their interests than those who do not. Another means to garner support for your human rights-focused campaign is to organize public awareness and advocacy campaigns. One key way to get a government to react to a civil society organization's requests for change, including adherence to human rights standards, is to raise the public's awareness and develop targeted advocacy campaigns. These types of campaigns can draw attention to what the government isn't doing well, but can also point to positive steps it is taking, if appropriate. Awareness-raising campaigns can take many forms. For example, they may focus on informing the public of its rights or how the provisions and specifics of the agreements that its government has signed on to and what signing on to an agreement means in actuality, or how the public can get involved, which may include gathering evidence of rights violations or contacting local government officials. Public awareness campaigns are often the first stage to a more robust advocacy campaign. Thinking back to the beginning of the lesson, when civil society actors as resources was discussed, Civil society groups may want to consider developing advocacy campaigns that highlight progress towards a government's adherence and implementation to specify human rights standards. Shadow reporting can also be used to promote or support a human rights-focused campaign. Shadow reports provide a mechanism for monitoring and raising awareness of government compliance with international treaties, conventions, and declarations to which countries are signatories. As part of their compliance with these agreements, governments are typically required to report to the international body associated with the agreement. These official government reports describe the progress that has been made toward various requirements outlined in the signed agreements. Often, civil society groups will conduct their own research on how well their respective government is complying with an agreement and will produce a supplement or alternative shadow report of the national government's official report. Shadow reports also allow groups to use the international agreements principles and standards to hold their government accountable for enhancing services and strengthening laws and policies addressing the relevant issue. Next, we briefly outline the 8 basic steps involved in developing a shadow report. First, determine an objective that relates to your purpose. The first step in developing a shadow report initiative is to determine exactly what your objective is. An objective is the immediate goal that you want your monitoring project to accomplish. This should also fit into the overarching purpose of partner or coalition member organizations. Second, outline the steps in the shadow reporting process. Once you and your partners have settled on an objective, you will need to outline the steps to develop a thorough shadow report. The basic process steps include developing a plan on how you will access necessary government information, analyzing data and findings. How will you analyze the information once you have it? Will you need special software or extra help to dig through the information to find trends, patterns, or to develop recommendations? Writing the shadow report. Who will write the report? Will you need any special human or technical support? What will be the vetting process for all coalition members for the final product? Publicizing findings. Begin to consider your outreach plan even before you begin your shadow report project. Do you need to develop or strengthen relationships with government officials or the media? Who will present the report to the government or relevant UN committee? Will you launch an advocacy campaign or public awareness campaign? Following up. Once the report is public, what will you need to do to follow up on the report's recommendations? In addition to the steps laid out here, you will also need to consider a few additional areas. Do you have the necessary human resources? You will also need to estimate necessary financial resources. Can coalition members provide financial contributions, or will you need to do extra fundraising, or can much of the work be done at little extra cost? Third, develop a timeline and implementation plan. Now that you have a general idea of the steps for the shadow report process, what is the timeline for implementation? What steps need to come first or will need to get started before others? Are there any important processes external to your project that you may need to consider as you plan your project, such as a legislative cycle or election? Fourth, determine a division of labor within your organization or coalition. Once you have developed a timeline and implementation plan, you will need to consider who will do which planned item. This may be done individually or together with many people from members of a partnership. If you're working in a coalition, the members may also develop a secretariat or steering committee that has ultimate responsibility for the shadow report process. This secretariat may include members from each participating organization or from selected groups. Fifth, identify the possible internal implications, including follow-on initiatives building off the shadow report. It will be important early on to begin to consider what implications the Shadow Report Project may have on your organization or a coalition, including its goals and activities and any further work your group may be considering. It is important to think about how your individual organization's work also contributes to the Shadow Report process. 6. Develop rigorous data collection methods using document reviews, surveys, and questionnaires, interviews, or small group discussions. The meat of the Shadow Report process is collecting and analyzing data. The best way to get started is to develop well-thought-out data collection tools. For example, if you're reviewing specific documents, you may want to develop a checklist of key information that would align with the convention you are developing a shadow report for. If you are collecting data through interviews or community surveys, you may want to develop questionnaires that have well-thought-out, non-biased questions that collect consistent information. If you are conducting small group discussions, you may want to develop a facilitator's guide that poses the same questions and provides instructions to facilitators so they're aware of the specific information you're gathering. In addition, you should also consider how you will keep information secure. What are your data management processes? Who will have access to the questionnaires, and where and how will they be stored? 7th, include key elements for each article or section of the treaty. Include the text of the treaty, convention, or accord, the government's stance on its compliance, the findings on the government's compliance, and your recommendations for improving government compliance. For whatever document or standard that you are developing a shadow report for, you will want to align your findings and data to specific articles. 8. Develop a strategy for making the shadow report public, including submission to the appropriate UN committee or other governing bodies, publication in local and international media, and submission to your host government. Now that all of the information and analysis is complete, what is the best way to present your findings? Of course, you will have the written shadow report that should be presented to both the relevant government officials as well as the appropriate UN committee. But how else can you use the information you collected and apply it to something more to further the broader objective? Perhaps you will develop an advocacy campaign, a public awareness campaign, another monitoring project, or a public information campaign. Much of this will be determined by what you found during the development of your report and what your other goals and objectives are. While shadow reporting is a great tool for monitoring and raising awareness of government compliance with international treaties, it does not come without its own risks and challenge. The next section will discuss some of the challenges in conducting a shadow report and flag elements that you should keep in mind before starting the process. What are the challenges to shadow reporting? Any initiative that seeks to hold government accountable can come with challenges. Scrutinizing government performance, whether to highlight success or failures, can make those in power feel uneasy. Here are a few of the risks to consider before starting a shadow reporting project. 1. Political space. When deciding whether to engage in shadow reporting, the political space first needs to be analyzed. Restricted political space could limit the extent to which groups are able to raise awareness of their findings and use those findings to create concrete changes. In a restricted political space, it could be dangerous to publicize documents that are critical of the government. 2. Access to information. Shadow reports need to have a certain amount of access to information in order to be robust and develop meaningful recommendations based on facts and evidence. Gathering information can be challenging, and in some cases impossible, if groups are unable to access public documents or observe government hearings or committee meetings. If the media is restricted and citizens are afraid to participate in surveys or interviews, then even data collection that does not directly involve the government would be difficult. 3. institutional capacity. In some cases, there may be political will within the government to increase citizen access to information or decision-making processes, but there may be institutional limitations. The government may not have the capacity to meet the needs of groups seeking to access the necessary information or processes as they develop their shadow report. Being aware of these potential institutional limitations is important as groups develop strategies and identify appropriate monitoring methods in an effort to achieve their larger organizational goals. 4. Power dynamics and political power. Other important factors to take into consideration when supporting or implementing shadow reporting recommendations are the power dynamics amongst the initiative's stakeholders. Challenges may arise if the group does not gain the respect of government officials or citizens do not feel that the group represents their interests. Shadow report coalitions should understand the power dynamics of the political space in which they're working and create positive relationships with stakeholders in order to gain their buy-in to the monitoring initiative.